morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is the Chicago Tribune against the University of Illinois. Mr. Ostfeld.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The law does not require a public university to choose between the privacy of student admissions records and a policy of open governance.
Now, Mr. Ostfeld, before we get into the merits of this case, I have a question about subject matter jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor.
I don't understand what this case is doing in federal court. It appears to have been filed in an effort to get a federal adjudication of a federal defense to a state law claim. And I had always understood it to be pretty well settled that that's not possible. The well-pleaded complaint doctrine has it that the claim has to arise under federal law. And I don't understand how the Tribune's claim arises under federal law rather than this being a federal defense. So is there a federal subject matter jurisdiction?
Your Honor, it's our position that there is federal subject matter jurisdiction. We agree with the Tribune on that. And we believe the Tribune...
You can't agree with the Tribune on that because their brief doesn't discuss jurisdiction at all. The Tribune's brief says that that your jurisdictional statement is complete and correct, and your jurisdictional statement doesn't discuss this issue at all.
Well, Your Honor, at its core, it's our position that this case is about conflicting interpretations of a federal statute.
Of course it is. That's always true when somebody tries to adjudicate a federal defense in federal court. To say it's a federal defense is to say it involves a federal law. My problem is the well-pleaded complaint doctrine, which says that the claim has to arise under federal law, and that having a federal defense does not mean the claim arises under federal law. And that's my problem. The claim arises under the Illinois Freedom of Information Act, and the university asserts a federal defense to the state law claim. And it's always seemed to me that that's a paradigm of a situation in which there's no federal jurisdiction. That's why I'm asking you to discuss it.
Your Honor, we submit that this case meets the standards set forth in the Rath Packing Company case from the Ninth Circuit.
No, you need Grable.
I'm sorry?
You need Grable. You know Grable?
No, Your Honor.
Supreme Court's decision, Grable and Sons. That's your
honor. It's no shame not to know Grable. It's a completely incoherent
but
decision.
It's your only case. It does have good language for you. I'm surprised you're not familiar with it. But anyway.
We will obviously be issuing a briefing order on this subject. I mean, you're not prepared to discuss it. We'll see whether the Tribune is prepared to discuss it.
All right, Your Honor. Should I turn to the merits, or would you? Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
The university respectfully submits that the objectives of privacy and open governance coexist under federal and state law, that under the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act...
I don't understand why you don't embrace, at least as an alternative ground, the Tribune's argument that this is... that if you disclose this information to them, it's not pursuant to a policy or a practice, which is what FERPA says, right? It's hardly your policy or your practice. It's just involuntary response to, you know, Department of Education.
The problem that we face.
I mean, I'm sorry. Your response to Illinois FOIA, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would that be a policy or practice?
Well, the problem we face, Your Honor, is that by operation of law, FOIA would operate as a policy or practice upon us.
No, it's not your policy or practice. How can you be punished for complying with law? Anyway, the department said they're not going to take your money away. They said that in the letter, right? They said, no, I'm not going to take your money away. Don't worry, you know.
Well,
calm down. Just the case seems, let me say, the litigation is kind of pointless to me. They want the files, and you want to keep your money, right? So you can both have that.
Your Honor,
we
view it.
The money. You say, yeah, it's not our policy or practice. Get to keep the money. They get the files.
Your Honor, I don't think we can get to that result because the problem we face is twofold. First, this is not just about preserving our federal funding. The Department of Education.
Of course it is. Of course it is. You don't have a legitimate interest in keeping these documents out of the hands of the press, they're a scandal, right? Universities has engaged in a scandal, the full dimensions of which are not yet evident, and the press wants to investigate. It's perfectly legitimate.
Well, Judge Posner, I respectfully disagree. I think the full parameters of this scandal have been disclosed.
Oh, of course. How do we know? We don't have seen the other files. You can't say the entire scandal is known, obviously.
If it's already known, then all the information that the Tribune wants is already public, and therefore you wouldn't have any objection to turning the documents over.
Well, respectfully, Judge Easterbrook, what the Tribune has already received are the names of all public officials who were involved in this.
You can't tell us, stand there and tell us that everything is known. Everything is not known, so forget it.
Look, there are two possibilities. Either everything is known, and in that event there's no privacy interest and all the documents can go to the Trib, or everything is not known. You can't have it both ways, that everything is known and we've got these private documents we don't turn over.
What is not known are the names of the students who were admitted under the category I process.
Everything is not known.
That's correct. The names of the students are not known, and the names and their addresses of their parents are not known.
Because the press, they want to know who are these families, you know, what are their connections to various public officials and so on. That's legitimate. In fact, it's important.
But Congress has made a significant and reasoned judgment that the privacy of student records is to be protected.
Congress hasn't made any such judgment. Congress has said that if a university takes federal money, then it can't do certain things. Actually, what the statute says is that the secretary can't give federal money to universities that do certain things. But what worries me, let me tell you what worries me about your position on the merits. It seems to be your position that any employee of the University of Illinois has the power to supersede a valid state statute. Any professor in the psychology department applies for a grant to do a research project, gets the grant, and now, voila, the University of Illinois is out of the state FOIA. Why is it that an executive, you know, a low-level person, not even nominated by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. Why is it that any low-level person in Illinois can get the University of Illinois an exemption from a valid state law?
Well, the exemption exists in the state law, Judge Easterbrook.
No, the exemption says requirements of federal law. There's no requirement of federal law that this might be done. There's a requirement, actually it's a requirement both of state and federal law, that the university keep its promises. But suppose you just... You know, the janitor goes out and he writes on a scrap of paper one day, in exchange for $1 and other good and valuable consideration, I promise not to comply. I promise that the University of Illinois won't comply with the state FOIA. We now have a contract preventing the state from complying with the FOIA. Is it your view that now the FOIA is just gone?
Well,
there's a valid contract not to comply with it.
No, of course not. There's not a general contractual exception to the state FOIA. What we're dealing
That's your argument. Right. Some professor in the psychology department or the dean of admissions or somebody else has made a contract with the federal government not to comply with the state law. And you say, as long as that contract, you know, it's not a federal requirement because we can stop contracting tomorrow. But as long as that contract is in force, we don't have to comply with the law. That not only strikes me as highly problematic, that strikes me as a violation of the Republican form of government clause, because it enables every menial official to countermand state laws. Can't possibly be right.
Well, Judge Easterbrook, I respectfully disagree with your characterization of the scenario that's been described here. Under spending clause jurisprudence, once you accept federal funding, you are subject to the terms and conditions of the statute.
You're not getting my point. Who is the you? If there were somebody with authority to speak for the whole state of Illinois, you know, if the contract had been signed by the governor and approved by the legislature, your argument would go through in a perfectly straightforward way. But as I understand the operation of the federal statute, the you can be nobody at all. If the state university admits somebody who has a federal scholarship, bang, these things attach to the university. In my example, if the professor of psychology applies for a grant to do some research, bang, the federal rules attach. So far as I can see, nobody with actual authority to commit the state ever agrees to this deal. That's the problem I'm having.
Well, I think there is a practical reality that should be acknowledged here, which is that this is not an instance of discrete professors or discrete students accepting federal funds. Federal funds constitute 20% of the university's annual operating budget. It receives $600 million a year in federal funding.
A little bit from this grant, a little bit from that scholarship, a little bit from, and so on. And each of these, in your view, so far as the federal statute is concerned, any one of them, if there were no federal grants at all, other than the one in my hypothetical, to one professor of psychology, the university has now opted out of the state FOIA. I'm asking a question about actual authority. Do these people have actual authority to commit the state of Illinois to this new disclosure policy?
Candidly, Judge Easterbrook, I'm not familiar with the university's grant application process. I don't know if they need to get administrative authority in order to apply for a grant.
I'm much less worried about whether the university permits a professor of psychology to do something than I am about whether the state legislature and governor, which have authority to make state policy, have delegated this authority to the university, which then subdelegates it to the professor. Otherwise, you've got this problem. The state legislature passes a law, and the governor signs it, and then the staff of the University of Illinois countermands it. That doesn't seem a sensible way of making state policy.
I respectfully disagree with the fundamental premise that this is countermanding the state statute, where the state has elected to include an exemption for federal law that specifically prohibits the disclosure.
I agree that federal law doesn't specifically prohibit this disclosure. Your brief expressly says there's no prohibition. The state can drop all the federal grants and comply with the state law. This prohibition, as you characterize it, is only while this contract is in force, while the state is receiving state federal bucks. And that decision to take the federal money doesn't appear to be made by anybody with authority to commit the state to anything. Are you seeing my problem now?
The problem that I'm struggling with, Judge Easterbrook, is there's nothing in the record to indicate the process by which the state goes about accepting this funding.
Well,
it was not in contention below.
That's a problem. That's a big problem.
Given the volume of funds received by the university from the federal government, it is almost incomprehensible to me that there could not be high-level state decision-makers involved in the decision to accept these federal education funds.
Including the legislature?
I don't know if the legislature is involved
in that. Suppose Congress were to pass a statute tomorrow that says, as a matter of federal law, any time the governor doesn't like a state FOIA, the governor can just rescind it. Would you think that would be valid federal legislation? No. The answer is no. It would violate the Republican form of government clause. Now, federal law changes, and it says the governor is free to take $1 from the federal government. As soon as the governor, exclusively, just the governor, legislature is cut out, as soon as the governor takes the dollar, state FOIA is hereby rescinded. Same problem, isn't it?
Well, perhaps, but I think the same problem would attach to the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, to Title IX, to highway funding, to virtually any spending clause statute could perhaps have this criticism leveled against it, that it places the decision whether to accept funding.
Look, maybe I should just give up. Maybe I'm not capable of being clear. The problem is not placing the decision to accept funding in the hands of the governor or the governor's subordinate. The problem is tying a decision to accept funding to the rescinding of a statute or the superstition of a statute. Right? If in accepting federal highway dollars, the governor had suddenly changed the state's speed limit, right, raised it from 55 to 90,
yes,
that would be a problem, would it not?
It would. I suppose what I'm struggling with is I don't see this as a rescission or a supersession of a federal or a state statute. It is the compatible terms of a federal and state statute. I see by the orange light,
well,
I believe.
Let me ask you something just about the disclosure to just sort of move the direction a little bit. Is there any way to reveal who made a request regarding Category 1 applications consistent with FERPA? For example, by identifying the names of just the requesters and the effect that their request had on certain unidentified applications. Why isn't that
in response to the 13 prior FOIA requests, an exercise very much like that was undertaken, where the names of students were removed and the names of private sponsors were removed, but the names of public sponsors and university officials that were involved in the Category I process were included.
Well, what if a state senator made requests on behalf of five applicants who had GPAs ranging between 2.0 and 2.5 and SATs ranging from 1,200 to 1,500, and three of those applicants were admitted to the university as a result of the senator's request? I mean, why can't that kind of information be provided?
In response to
particularly if the names of the students are redacted.
That information was provided in response to the prior FOIA request. The name of the senator would have been provided. The names of the students would have been redacted. Their academic credentials, I don't know whether those would have been redacted or not. It would have depended on whether those academic credentials and perhaps their high school's names would have been sufficient to identify the student. I see that my time has expired.
And let me ask you this. Let's say there's a wealthy dignitary who approaches an admissions officer for a public university and says, I highly recommend my godson for your school. I'll give you $2 million if you admit him. Does the public have the right to know about that? Does FERPA completely protect this exchange from the press because it's just a note made about a phone call?
In that instance, FERPA would permit the disclosure of de-identified information. So the name of the dignitary could not be provided because that would automatically identify the name of the dignitary's son. But the broad outlines of the proposed transaction could be disclosed under FERPA. If there are no further questions, I'll yield the floor to Ms. Klein from the Department of Justice.
Ms. Klein.
I'll try to directly address Your Honor's questions. The Illinois, by statute, has authorized its universities to accept federal funds, and as have all states, as far as I know. In accepting federal funds, a university completes a standard form program participation agreement. It's not in the record, but I brought along one from Illinois, in which the university agrees that it will comply with various federal statutes that are conditions on federal education funds, including Title VI, Title IX, the Rehabilitation Act, and, as relevant here, the FERPA. Clearly, a state legislature, could preclude its universities from accepting federal funds. What it cannot do is authorize the university to take the funds, but then nullify the conditions, the federal conditions on federal funds, and Illinois has not purported to do that here. Instead, the Illinois FOIA contains an exemption for disclosures that would be prohibited by federal law, here, the FERPA. And the related question about policy or practice, again, from the perspective of the federal government, the state is a unitary. And if the state is requiring its universities to make disclosures that are prohibited by FERPA, that would be a policy or practice that would be in violation of the FERPA.
Why doesn't that just mean the secretary has to withhold the money from the university?
The secretary...
But if you look at the federal statute, the statute does not impose any duties on universities. Clause after clause begins, the secretary shall not grant funds to, let me read it out directly. Clause after clause begins, no funds shall be made available under any applicable program to any educational agency or institution which has a policy of. That looks like a rule for the secretary, not a rule for the university.
Yes, but it doesn't follow that a university that has taken the federal funds, that the secretary's only recourse would be to prospectively terminate funds. The background federal common law right to seek specific performance is in place. The statute itself, it's quite clear that the flip side of no funds shall be made.
I assume the secretary has a right to get specific performance of any promise. That's what happened in the Miami University case.
Exactly.
But this isn't a suit by the secretary for specific performance. And, we know from Gonzaga University that this act doesn't create private rights precisely because it's worded as a direction to the secretary.
Yes, well, for several reasons it doesn't create individually enforceable rights. But here, again, the language of the...
create prohibitions. If it doesn't create any individually enforceable rights, see Gonzaga University, how does it create prohibitions?
The statute starts by saying no funds shall be made available, But it's clear that means if you take the funds, you are prohibited from doing these things. And the statute itself has a list of exceptions saying this funding prohibition shall not be construed to prohibit a university from making a list of specified disclosures, like the outcome of a disciplinary proceeding to the victim of a crime of violence, etc. There's no question that
really important things. The university can make its football scores public.
Well, Your Honor, again, just structurally, I just want to make clear that once a university takes federal dollars, it is then bound by the conditions on those funds, including the FERPA. And that means it cannot have a system whereby it responds to any FOIA request with disclosures that are not inconsistent with FERPA.
I'm surprised that there's no official from the Department of Education on your brief. Is there? Or did I miss something?
No, but, of course, the Department of Education
is... No, but... The Department of Education seems very bashful in this matter. They've written this little mushy letter, right? Little mushy letter. Don't worry, we're not taking your money away. That's it. They don't seem to have any interest in enforcing this.
Well, to the contrary, Your Honor, the Department of Education is our client. They are fully in support of the position in our brief.
I am surprised. This is a matter for the Department of Education. I'm really surprised that there's no submission by them in the litigation.
Your Honor, we're here on behalf of the Department of Education,
what?
And I could refile
no,
the brief with their names on the cover.
The brief is filed on behalf of the United States. The Solicitor General might agree with the Department of Education about this, but the Solicitor General has the power to tell the Department of Education to take a hike.
It's very unusual for us to get a brief on behalf of what we think would be on behalf of a government agency without an official, you know, the general counsel or so on.
Your Honor, this is my oversight, and I would be happy to refile the brief with their names on the cover.
Why is the Department of Education so recessive in this matter? Why isn't it in this litigation?
I'm not sure what else to say. They are in this litigation. They are my client.
Why wasn't it in the district court?
I don't believe we even knew about this case in the district court. I mean, there are lots of...
The Department of Education did not know about this case? You're kidding.
If we did...
It was plastered over every major newspaper in America.
If we did, there are lots and lots of cases involving statutes that we...
Of course the department knew about this litigation, and it didn't do anything.
Your Honor,
I'm very surprised by that, and I don't think you're speaking for the Department of Education.
Well, we are here as amicus, and just to clarify that the letter that the department said cutting off funds is a last resort when compliance cannot be secured through voluntary means.
Actually, that's not what they said.
Well, anyway, I don't want to quarrel over what they said. Clearly, the powers that are vested in the department, you know, generally represented by the Department of Justice, you know, and the United States.
They said something like what you said. I withdraw that. But they put it really strangely. They said such severe measures, you know, terminating the hundreds of millions of dollars is a joke. I'm never going to do that, obviously. Such severe measures are typically used as a last resort when the Secretary determines that compliance with FERPA cannot be achieved by voluntary means. Why voluntary means? Can't the Department of Education get an injunction?
Yes, and that is exactly what we did.
Then why did they say that? Well,
no, but yes, we could get an injunction. There are a number of remedies. They could cut off funds, but that, as under all spending clause programs, is a severe remedy.
Idea of, you know, the unitary state. When the Supreme Court and Gonzaga talk about policy and practice, it talks about an institutional policy and practice. Makes it sound as if it's something the institution, the university, chooses to do, not that it's coerced to do by the state.
Well, Gonzaga didn't present the question of a state law that was requiring disclosures inconsistent with the FERPA, but so the Supreme Court had no occasion to address it.
Where do you get the idea that?
Well, again, I mean, it's kind of the background common sense point that if the United States, if Congress authorizes the federal funds to state entities, you know, clearly the state legislature can preclude those entities from taking the funds, but it cannot simultaneously say, yes, you know, you have our blessing to take the funds, but no, you may not comply with the conditions.
If the Department of Education doesn't like this, why didn't it bring a lawsuit?
We have not reviewed any of the underlying records. We are not familiar with what redactions would be possible. Normally, when we bring a lawsuit...
I understand that. It's Department of Education enforces FERPA. Or it has the interest in FERPA.
We have the power to enforce FERPA. We don't adjudicate every FERPA dispute.
Every FERPA dispute? This is hundreds of millions of dollars. This is the biggest FERPA dispute ever, probably, isn't it? You ever had anything
if this case, oh, like leaving aside jurisdiction, the proper ruling would be to reverse the ruling of the district court, which concluded that essentially FERPA is irrelevant.
Has the department ever analyzed the Illinois FOIA as a whole for its compliance with what the department thinks is required? One of the things that struck me as odd about this litigation is that there are a bunch of exemptions in the state law, independent of this required by federal law provision, that substantially track the federal FOIA and purport to protect certain privacy interests. An interesting question for the Department of Education, I would think, is whether there's any inconsistency between the state law and federal contract requirements, given the state law's existing protection of privacy. So one position the Department of Education might take is that as long as the University of Illinois applies accurately the existing exemptions for privacy protection, there's no conflict with federal policy. Is that the Department of Education's position?
My understanding is that the Illinois FOIA's privacy exemption was amended in a way that made it narrower and that it's not congruent with the FERPA, and I believe the parties are in agreement on that issue. We haven't briefed it, but we're here, again, only addressing the district court's ruling, which is premised on the assumption.
Yes, I understand that, but it might turn out, first, that there's no jurisdiction to make this ruling, and second, that this ruling is entirely gratuitous because the university might be entitled to withhold disclosure under the other provisions, or it might turn out that the other provisions are fully compatible with federal law.
Yes, well, Your Honor, we raised the jurisdictional question because we shared the court's concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to make sure I've addressed, though, to the extent there are merits concerns, I want to make sure that I've addressed them.
Thank you, Ms. Klein.
Thank you.
Mr. Klink.
I'm going to talk about jurisdiction, Your Honor.
We hope so.
There are two prongs in why there's federal jurisdiction under 1331 here. Number one is Grable. Grable is a case in which it said that the right in the underlying action, even though it was a state cause of action, depended on the determination of a federal right to determine the outcome. And that right was so important.
Do you think that the Supreme Court has rescinded the well-pleaded complaint doctrine and now generally allows federal defenses to be litigated in federal court?
I do not.
The justices expressly denied that they were doing that.
I do not. And
Why isn't this just the standard case? You think a federal defense. It is a federal defense that may be completely beside the point because the university has asserted other state law defenses. The university says there are other privacy exemptions in this act, and we think this information is covered by them. So it might be entirely gratuitous to adjudicate this federal defense. That certainly wasn't the Supreme Court's case.
I don't believe that that is the case or that it would be gratuitous, Your Honor. I think the well-pleaded complaint...
This case, so far as I can see, it's not only that there's a federal defense. This case may well end up being adjudicated wholly on state law grounds. If the university is right, and one of the privacy exemptions to the Illinois FOIA covers these documents, there'll never be the slightest need to consider any federal law defense.
There is no state law claim in this case.
That's because you have filed, as a federal suit, your federal defense, omitting any state issues. That states the problem. It doesn't state the reason why there's jurisdiction.
I do not believe that that's the problem. And I think if we go to the government's and the university's favorite case, the University of Miami, it states what the problem is.
There's no jurisdictional problem in that case. It was a suit filed by the national government.
That's correct. But in that case, the government took the position.
No, your argument has to be that from the outset it was plain that there would be no state law issue in the litigation, right? Isn't that
right?
That's Grable, right?
Right.
If there's no state law issue, just federal issues, it doesn't matter whether it's in the defense or in the complaint.
That's right. And that's the position. And it does not upset the federal-state balance.
So how is it plain from the outset that there's no conceivable state issue when the University of Illinois has asserted that some of the exemptions in the state statute apply? When you made your state FOIA request, the university sent back a response that said, there are these several state law exemptions, and oh, by the way, there's this general federal override. So how do we know that there are no state law issues since the university has asserted them?
The university did not assert them in this case.
That's because the only thing you raised in this case was a federal issue. You can't have state law defenses to a federal argument.
If I could pursue my argument about the University of Miami and why that is of concern.
It's completely irrelevant to the jurisdictional question. There's a special statute saying that any suit filed by the national government is within federal jurisdiction.
I agree that that was what the statute was there. But what happened in the Miami case is the state law claims, the regime that the government is urging and the rule that the Judge Easterbrook is suggesting would mean that you could only litigate FERPA claims in state court unless you got to the Supreme Court on cert in some occasion, which would mean that the entire FERPA jurisprudence would be state law made by all kinds of state law judges making non-uniform.
Unless the federal government filed its own suit, which is, after all, exactly what Gonzaga said is the right way to enforce this statute. I mean, it sounds like you are disagreeing in part with Gonzaga's conclusion about how this statute is enforced and disagreeing in part with the very old doctrine that there is generally no federal jurisdiction to consider federal defenses. You think federal courts ought to decide all federal issues. Well, if that were true, the well-pleaded complaint doctrine is wrong, but the justices have not displaced it.
And your argument has to be that the only state law defense involved in this case is the one that incorporates FERPA, right?
Right.
Isn't that the argument? Are there no other potential state law defenses?
I don't see what they are.
When the university denied your FOIA request, it listed several of the exemptions. So why don't you see what they are? You may disagree with them, but the university said it had state law responses.
I understand that. The university's concern, which is manifest in this argument here, is it's going to lose federal funding. So they want to have.
No, it's not going to lose federal funding.
We already know that.
But
that's a
phantom.
That's a rhetorical.
That's why we're here. They wanted a federal court order before they would give us the documents. That's why we're here. We didn't do this to inconvenience the federal courts. We understand the jurisdictional
of convenience. This is a question of authority. Congress could authorize the litigation of federal defenses, and there is, of course, a time-tested way to litigate federal defenses. That's for the natural state defendant to file a declaratory judgment action. If this were a declaratory judgment suit filed by the University of Illinois, we would apply the mirror image doctrine under which a federal defense could be litigated. But you're not the natural defendant. You're the natural plaintiff. So there are two ways to get this case into federal court initially. One is a suit by the Department of Education or the United States. The other is a declaratory judgment act by the University of Illinois. We don't have either one of those. We've just got somebody who's trying to get around the well-pleaded complaint doctrine.
If I could turn to the merits.
Go ahead. We'll be asking for supplemental briefs on this issue.
Thank
you. Do you know, by the way, who made this decision to take the federal money and whether there is some authority for executive officials in Illinois to contract out of the Illinois?
I do not know that, Your Honor. If you look at FERPA and what it is involved there, it is a statute that just requires a policy and practice, doesn't require even substantial compliance, recognizes that there could be individual instances of disclosure. All it requires of the university is to have a policy and practice. In a FERPA case in a state court, a determination about whether a document is exempt in one case has no bearing on whether there's been a policy and practice.
What about Ms. Klein's argument that the Illinois FOIA itself establishes the policy for the university, since the university is bound by it? That's a good argument.
Since the university is bound by the FOIA?
Yeah.
All that you could be bound by FERPA is to have a policy and practice.
Yes, but the state of Illinois says to the university, you shall have the policy of complying with the Illinois FOIA statute. That becomes a policy of the university. It's involuntary, but you know it's forced on it, right? The state can impose policies on its universities.
I confess I don't understand what her argument is, Your Honor.
I think it's very clear. What I'm saying is the university can impose a policy on, I'm sorry, the state can impose a policy on its universities. That becomes a policy of the university, right? And as a policy, it falls within FERPA's prohibition, right?
But all that FERPA could prohibit was just not having a policy or practice. Does not prohibit individual disclosure.
Why isn't the Illinois FOIA a policy or practice? That's the question my colleague is asking.
It is not something that's been adopted by the university.
No, but the university is subject to the laws of Illinois.
Suppose state law says no university shall enroll black and white students at the same time. Right? Adopts a policy of racial segregation. The United States has had those policies. And federal law says you can't take federal funds if you engage in racial discrimination. Would you say that because the policy was adopted by the state legislature, it wasn't a policy or practice?
No,
of course you wouldn't. So why is this any different?
Because the scope of what the prohibition is not on individual disclosures. That's what Gonzaga said. It is something, the statute just requires substantial compliance. All the university has to do is have a policy or practice. Not have a policy or practice, rather, of disclosure.
Well, that's a different, that's not a bad argument, but that's a different argument. You have substantial compliance because there are only a few hundred of the many thousands of students that are...
Right, and similar to my question to Ms. Klein, wouldn't the state FOIA, with its existing privacy exemptions, be, if not complete compliance, at least substantial compliance?
I believe so. And we made that position to be.
You analyze those in detail to try to figure it out? Ms. Klein said, surely no.
I would say...
You believe otherwise. Why, concretely?
Because if you look at Section 147, I think it's C of the Illinois Compiled Statutes, that is personal information in a public record where it is highly objectionable to disclosure, it is protected and exempt. If that is the case and you followed that and the state required you to do that, there would not be a policy or practice of
I'm puzzled disclosure. By your other lawsuit, the one in Illinois, in an Illinois state court. So that, I take it, is narrower than this. It's asking for information besides what you're arguing you're entitled to, or what? I don't understand.
That
you haven't sued for all of the information you want from the university, have you? Does that suit cover everything?
Does not recover this request. You did not see in the university objecting that this request was duplicative of anything that we'd asked before?
I'm not, look, answer my question. What you're looking for in this Illinois state court suit? Is this different from what, is this a part of what you want or everything that you want that the university won't give you?
The only thing we want now are the names.
Would you answer my question?
Yes. The initial case that was filed in way back in the spring, way before the Mikva Commission, asked for documents in connection.
Way before what?
Before the Mikva Commission, the state of Illinois investigation.
It's 2009, right?
Right,
okay.
Right. That had to deal with asking, without asking for names or anything, test scores of people who were admitted and not admitted.
Okay, and what's the status?
In line with the question from Judge Williams.
What's the status of that suit?
Nothing has happened with it.
So why were you suing just for that when you also wanted the names?
We wanted the names after the Clout Commission report came out because the names were the key to whether these relationships.
So why didn't you amend your state court suit?
Because the university said it wanted a federal court order to get this resolved because it was afraid of falling into
what. Why do you care what the university wants? So this relates to the jurisdictional issue and to possible abstention. Why? You don't want to be in federal court, you want to be in state court. So why didn't you amend your complaint when you decided you wanted more than the test scores? You want the students' names. So you go in and you amend your complaint. Why didn't you do that?
Because we believed that if we had the FERPA issue resolved, that would be the end of this whole dispute with the university. That was our understanding.
Didn't you want to remain in state court? Wouldn't that be a little friendlier? No?
No.
No?
Federal courts are to decide what federal law
federal
means.
Federal courts are friendlier to...
I may rethink that after this morning.
Well, I guess you mean the federal
Well, you're just back to the argument that everybody who has a federal defense should be able to get an adjudication in federal court about it. And that's not the law. It's never been the law.
The other points I wanted to make just briefly, there was a claim that we waived some argument, and that was not the case in the lower court. Our firm position throughout this is we wanted the records of the shadow process. We're not interested in the official records, and these Category 1 records are not official records.
Why? I'm sorry to torment you like this, but...
It's my job.
But why didn't you file... why did you ever file it? If you want to be in federal court, as you do, why did you file that state court suit rather than filing this declaratory judgment suit?
I wanted to resolve the issue with the university. They wanted a federal court order. That's why. And if you look at their press releases when they talk about...
The university telling you they wouldn't comply with a state court order?
Yes.
That would be...
Yes.
So they would stand in contempt of court, and the president of the University of Illinois could rot in state prison.
They weren't
going to follow a state court order.
I may overstate it. But
I bet you are.
Apologies. If you look at their press release after Judge Gottschall decided the case, it's at 367 in the appendix. They talk about their concern, and they recite what happened in Miami, that there was all this state court litigation where the state court said that this was not an educational record, no exemptions applied, and then they got hit in federal court with a lawsuit by the Department of Education.
Has it occurred to you, by the way, that a federal court order in a litigation between you and the university by a district court would be utterly irrelevant if the Department of Education decided to cut off the state's funds? Department of Education is not a party to such a suit, is not bound by it. District court decisions have zero authoritative value. What would be the difference between a state and a federal court order unless the Department of Education was a party, which it wasn't and isn't?
just reacting to the position of the university. They looked
so
at
the reason you want to be in federal court is because the university's general counsel is completely irrational. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. They had concerns about losing their funding. And that's apart from any issue.
Yeah, but you have not described in any rational way the distinction between a state and federal court order, neither of which would be binding on the Department of Education, and both of which would be equally binding on the state university. There just isn't any difference. You can't articulate one. I don't see one. The Supreme Court has said over and over and over that state courts are perfectly competent to adjudicate federal claims and federal defenses. If you believe differently, or the University of Illinois' general counsel believes differently, neither of you has explained why. No legal reason has been given.
So the bottom line is, just to get this issue resolved and not to get into litigation strategy or anything, in a way it was just an agreement between the parties to get this resolved so you could know how to go forward in the state case. That's just the bottom line. And this was the vehicle everybody thought would be the best.
And not going forward in the state case, our understanding was that would be the end of the matter. Because there's an issue of federal law here.
And some of the complexities of this matter that my colleagues have pointed out were issues that you really hadn't taken into account. Is that fair to say?
That's a fair position, I think, by all sides. I won't speak for the university.
I understand.
Why did you bring a declaratory judgment suit? Why didn't you ask for an injunction? So aren't you suing? You're charging a violation of the First Amendment, aren't you?
That's right.
Okay.
Which is another basis one could claim jurisdiction.
Pardon?
Could claim jurisdiction. The Tribune could bring a 1983 case against the university, asserting a First Amendment right, a colorable claim.
Does your complaint refer to the First Amendment?
Does not.
It does not. It's just based on fair protest.
That's right.
So that's odd also, right?
Maybe that's a result of Bowen against Roy, which holds that there's no First Amendment right of access to information in state and federal files. That is, the First Amendment is not a Freedom of Information Act.
I see that my time is up here.
I know you want to sit down. I know you want to sit down. And, of course, the cleanest way that this thing could have been brought is if the Department of Education was in this and had actually sued and filed an injunction.
That would be.
And, of course, that might have taken a lot of time. I'm just trying to get behind what the strategy was.
That would take a lot of time. The information would be stale, right. Getting staler.
Right. And so this was an expeditious way to try to get it.
Our view.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Klink.
Thank you.
Mr. Osfeld, your time expired, but we asked you a lot of questions, so I'll give you 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Two quick points that I'd like to address. First is Judge Posner on your question of a policy or practice in substantial compliance. I would respectfully direct the Court's attention to the Indiana Appellate Court's decision in the Indiana Newspapers case, which I felt had an excellent analysis of this issue, where the Court spoke to the point that you can't really, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you can't really look at the issue of compliance from the standpoint of the requestor. It needs to be from the standpoint of the requestee. Any individual FOIA request could, of course, be called a singular instance rather than a policy or practice. But when you're dealing with an institution like the university that receives 500 or more FOIA requests every year, many of which call for information protected by FERPA, what that amounts to, because we are bound by state law, is the equivalent of a policy or practice, because we are required not just in the individual instance, but in every instance where we get a FOIA request that seeks FERPA-protected information to respond to that crew request. Therefore, substantial compliance would not be possible. Under state law, we would have a policy or practice of not complying with FERPA.
If, of course, the privacy exemptions of the Illinois statute are insufficient
Correct,
to comply
Your Honor.
With the federal.
And that is the second issue that I wanted to address. I'm sorry?
Do you agree with Ms. Klein on that?
We agree that the other FOIA exemption, we agree with her that that would be the case if the other exemptions were not adequate, and it is our position that the other exemptions under FOIA are not adequate.
And why?
There's really two exemptions that could apply to this type of information. One is the personal information exemption, which really just applies to personal identifiers, social security numbers, that type of thing. That's obviously much less effective than the protections that FERPA provides. The other exemption, the privacy, the personal information exemption, applies where the disclosure would constitute a clearly unwarranted invasion of personal privacy, which has two criteria. It must be highly personal or objectionable to a reasonable person, and the subject's right to privacy must outweigh any legitimate public interest. Now, that sets the bar very high as compared to FERPA, which has only two criteria. The records must directly relate to a student.
So you're saying that that your only possible defense under Illinois FOIA is the incorporation of FERPA.
Your only defense
to the Tribune is the provision in the Illinois FOIA that incorporates FERPA.
Not in every instance. There would still be, we suspect, some overlap where information protected by FERPA would also be protected by FOIA, but it would have to be handled on a case-by-case basis,
I thought one of the defenses in Illinois FOIA is compliance with federal law.
Yes.
Right. And that's FERPA.
Yes.
So that's all, right, that you have in the way of a defense? Because you say these other state defenses are inapplicable.
That is our position, is that as a protection for all of the information sought by the Tribune, only the federal compliance exemption protects us for all categories of information sought by the Tribune.
That wasn't quite the question. Your letter, your response to the Tribune denying its request for information, relied on these personal privacy exemptions in the state FOIA.
Yes.
My colleague's question is, are you withdrawing that and saying that if you lose this litigation, you will turn everything over without any other state law defense?
We are not withdrawing that. It is our position that what is protected would have to be handled on a piecemeal basis versus everything that is being requested by the Tribune right now is protected.
In other words, you want this dispute to last as long as possible, deferring the press's access, even if not denying it.
Not at all, Judge Easterbrook. We would like this to be handled expeditiously.
When a lawyer says the word piecemeal, that's usually what he means.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, that's what we're left with, is piecemeal protection if we don't have the protection of FERPA.
All right.
FERPA has been the golden...
Well, I think we see part of your position, but you'll have a chance to expand. We would like the parties to file supplemental briefs on the question whether this suit is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the federal courts. And under Grable, one of the issues that's pertinent is whether there are any state law issues in the case. The second thing that needs to be discussed in these supplemental briefs is who accepted the federal money and whether, as a matter of state law authority, they have actual authority to make changes in the state's FOIA policy. And that, of course, may also be relevant to the first jurisdictional question, because actual authority is also an issue of state law. These supplemental memos will be due in 14 days, parties to file simultaneously.
And will we be requesting that the DOE file something so we're clear on that?
Well, I don't think we have any authority to request that they file something, but if the Department of Energy wishes to endorse this brief...
Not energy.
Sorry, the Department of Education. It's all
right.
E's.
Right.
The Department of Education wishes to endorse this brief, they can file an amendment. And in fact, the issues about state law authority that I've raised are perhaps issues on which the Attorney General of Illinois might wish to express a view. The question of state law, I assume, would not be definitively settled by what the University of Illinois has to say about this subject. All right. Supplemental submissions are due in 14 days. And thank you to all counsel. The case will be taken under advisement when we've received...